And nice as well to be joined by Amy Shaw. Amy joined in studio, actually. Amy is a senior vice president at St. Louis Public Television, and they call that Nine Network of Public Media. Amy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I can write this whole trip off now, Bob.
There you go. There you go. Oh, looking for the angle. You must be
That's
in.
Right.
You must be in broadcasting. I'm going to read a little bit of a bio off of the Nine Network website. Amy Shaw is the Nine Network of Public Media's Senior Vice President of Community Engagement. She is recognized as a national leader in community engagement and the transition of public broadcasting to public media. Amy has led the, actually says Shaw, they should change that, has led the station in groundbreaking projects that leverage on-air, online, and community engagement for measurable impact around important and complicated issues facing communities and for sustainability of public media. That sounds great. I have no clue what that means.
Well, I think
let's
you
start
might.
With, probably do, but let's start with community engagement.
Sure.
You met, in fact, our station manager, Deb Benedict, a number of years ago.
That's right.
At something involving community engagement.
That's right.
And it's kind of some words that you hear. It's like some other things, words that you hear.
Sure.
And you think, yeah. I wonder what that means.
So
what's community engagement?
Well, Deb and I met in 2007, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which does some funding for public radio and television stations around the country, WTIP included, engaged 12 stations around the country in an initiative called the Community Engagement Initiative. And really what it was a pilot to get some forward-thinking stations on the path to community engagement. So historically, the term has been outreach, which if you think of the term outreach is really about you, the station, reaching out into the community, pushing things out. And so it kind of becomes very activity-driven. Community engagement is a very different, it's a really an ethos. It isn't just a set of activities, it's a real ethos of how the organization, how the public radio station, how the public television station is in the community.
I see.
How it engages with the community, how it works with the community as a participant, not as a consumer, but as a participant to really address the most important issues of the community. Really putting, I like to think of it as putting your finger on the pulse of the community.
So as a participant, as opposed to also being just an observer
exactly.
or a reporter
exactly.
of what's going on.
Right.
And they're so part of what's
huge,
going on.
Huge, huge difference. And so a big piece of my role at our station, we're the PBS station in St. Louis, a big part of my role there is overseeing our content creation. So all the programming that we create, and in a historical fashion, it would be our producers gather around the table and they say, well, here are the people that I know, here are the issues we're going to cover, and they go out and cover them and they create really very good programming. But that's not good enough. In an age where there's so much media, when there's so much sort of the soundbiting of issues across our community, people need a real way to participate and to make sure that their voices are really heard and the things that they're concerned about are heard. So the difference now is that our producers really go out and not just talk to people, but convene groups of people across the community from all different spectrums to really understand what those issues are in a community and then create the story. So they don't come to the community with the story. They go to the community and get the story.
Clearly, this is an activity that, at least in commercial broadcasting, commercial television, commercial radio, has never really been part of the overall thing. Commercial broadcasting has always been, okay, here's our programs. Hopefully
right.
you like them, and hopefully you support the sponsors who are paying for them.
Right.
Whereas that's not the case, but has public television, public radio, public broadcasting also been doing it that way in a little different fashion?
Yeah, sure. I would say that. Yeah, absolutely. The station that I work for in St. Louis, which is the number one watched public television station in the country. More people watch public
really?
Television in St. Louis than anywhere else in the country. So, we definitely had a lot of credibility. People liked us.
Mm-hmm.
But we were operated much more like a commercial station where if you listened to us, if you watched us, that was great. But we weren't necessarily concerned with how you exactly felt about those issues or if your voice was really being heard. And I think to a large part, commercial media is that way. I mean, you really have to think about your sponsors
Absolutely.
First. I think public television and public radio have been a little bit different because I think we've always thought about the listeners and the viewers first. But I don't think we had as much of a vocabulary or language to do that. And I think this initiative that WTIP was involved in, that we were involved in 10 other public radio and television stations, small and large, all different kinds of communities around the country, I think it got us on the path to really thinking differently about who we were in the community, what role we served. It wasn't,
right.
Being local doesn't just mean that your studio is in a local community. It means that your doors are open. It means you are visible in the community, but not just from an activity standpoint, doing nice things. It's about really addressing what communities need you to address, mm-hmm. that you really have your fingers on the pulse of those issues that drive the community, that drive vitality. I will also say we think about sustainability a lot. So there's always a challenge to our federal funding in Congress, and there is another one right now actually in the House that's been put up. So we're always thinking about who we are, and I think the idea of engagement has really changed that conversation in many communities. And I can only say in our community, our funding has changed significantly. We've received more funding from the community. We've become more sustainable as a result of really addressing those issues in the community. And I think WTIP is largely the same.
You bet. And so if I'm hearing what you're saying correctly, is that where public broadcasting and historically, I think, has used language similar to we're member-driven, now you're trying to make that really, we're trying to make that truer than ever.
Absolutely. I would also say it's not just members. So we think about absolutely. We think about, and not even listeners, we think about people who are in our community. It isn't just the people who listen or the people who support us financially. While those are very important folks and we appreciate that very much, as I know you guys do here, it's really about the whole community. Everybody that's in the community really has a role to play in this, and whether they participate or not, you do serve those folks. What we find out is through some very important work that we've done around the mortgage crisis, really helping people get some very significant resources to help them weather the storms of financial crisis from 2008 to the present, we're finding out that it's not only the people that listen to us, but those people or watch us, those people actually tell their friends who may not watch us, who may not listen to us, and they tell two friends and so on. And so it's definitely the conversational effect that it isn't just people who watch public television. It's really the whole community is impacted by this kind of work.
We're visiting with Amy Shaw. Amy is the Senior Vice President for St. Louis Public Television, which is called Nine Network of Public Media. And I want to talk about public media as opposed to public broadcasting in just a second. But how does community engagement change the way you produce programming? Clearly, if you're a participant as opposed to just an observer or a reporter, it's going to be different. How does that affect the kind of programming that you're doing, for instance, in St. Louis?
So a good example of that, we're working on a big initiative right now nationally to address the high school dropout crisis. The United States is really struggling when it comes to high school graduation rates. Nationally, only 72% of young people graduate from high school. That leaves 28% of our young people not graduating from high school. And you can imagine in our global economy what that's doing to the United States. And so this is something that communities large and small across the country are taking on. And what we're doing is locally and nationally working with other public television stations to say, listen, you may think you understand this in your community, but you really need to go out and talk with lots of people about this. Convene the partners who really address this set of issues on a daily basis, both from an education perspective, a civic, faith, corporate, all of the factors and all of the sectors that are involved in it, to come together to really understand what the story is and then tell the story. Don't come to the community already having the story formed in your mind. And that's really difficult for producers, I have to say. And I've been a producer. You tend to think you know the story based on what you understand of the community, or based on who your sources are, if you will. But once you really start getting into the community, understanding what all the issues are, you start to frame it in a very different perspective. The other piece of that is you start framing it from various points of view. So it isn't the point of view that you understand, it's the point of view that you learn from all these different interactions with community members. And sometimes I think people think it's sort of the traditional sense of, well, you go into a church basement, you talk to people. There's that aspect of it, but there's also convening through your partner organizations. I know WTIP does a terrific job of working with partners on so many levels, as do really solid public media organizations around the country. It's about really understanding the story from multiple perspectives through the eyes of those people that work on the ground every day, as opposed to you just coming in as a disinterested third party, collecting the story, going back and telling the story and broadcasting and moving on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. I also think it's about sort of the long-term relationship you have with your community. So most of the issues that we deal with are very complicated and they're not going to be solved overnight. So we stay with those sets of issues and those people who are working in those sets of issues for a very, very long time, multi-year initiatives. And I think that goes back to the idea of the difference between public media and public broadcasting.
And now that leads me to my next question, because your bio, as I read earlier, has led the station and the transition of public broadcasting to public media. What's the difference?
It's not just a different set of terms or a change in the nomenclature. It's really about who you are in the community. So public broadcasting is about broadcasting out. Public media is about being in the community. It's about using all the platforms that you have. So we're a television station, but we have our on-air work, we have our work in the community, we have our work online. We have multiple television channels that we can use at our disposal to address these key issues. So you use the multiplicity of all those platforms in combination with the conversation in the community, the pulse of the community, to really tell the stories that drive some set of outcomes. So public media is about addressing those issues, working in tandem with the community to help solve those sets of issues. Public media alone isn't going to solve those issues, but it really gives people, I think, a set of understanding or a pathway to understanding to ultimately take action, to mobilize, to address those issues. I think a lot of people in our communities feel powerless. What are they supposed to do? They hear a story on the news, and largely it's anxiety-producing. And then what do they do with that? I don't think that's quite the same here at WTIP, because I think you guys have a very special sort of focus in your community. And because you're so engaged with your community, you don't sort of drop those bombs and then walk away. Engagement really allows you to tell the fuller story so that people have a pathway to become involved and they feel hopeful about their ability to help solve these issues. Whereas I think traditional news doesn't really provide that opportunity.
So public media has to do with not just broadcasting over the airwaves, if you will, but obviously, websites and the internet and all of the rest of that. So the internet has, we visit with people who are musicians or authors or any number of people where the internet has dramatically changed how they approach what they do. What has that done as far? And clearly, I'm guessing that a lot of what you're doing in St. Louis, a lot of what other stations, what WTIP does is to try and make itself more relevant,
right.
Continue to be relevant, or more relevant so that they can be sustainable.
Right.
So they're still here 5 years from now. But what is the relationship with the internet? How has that changed how you stay relevant?
It's a relationship. I think because, you know, the masses really have a whole new mechanism to have a conversation with you. If you use the internet as a promotional tool, I think you've got it wrong. If you use it as a way to have a conversation, to really understand what people are talking about, what their concerns are, I mean, we really think of it as a relationship. So when you're on Facebook or when you're on Twitter and you're interacting with your community, I think you get a much deeper sense of what people are talking about, what their concerns are. And as opposed to just sort of taking that information and saying, thank you, we heard you, you have an opportunity to really have a conversation back with them and also get those conversations going among multiple members of the community that I think otherwise would just be either a one-way conversation or a conversation between you and one person. Mm-hmm. So the internet really has changed that dramatically. The other piece of that is that your content is seen by people everywhere. So I live in St. Louis, Missouri, 12 hours away, and I can listen to WTIP streams.
And do you?
And I do.
All right.
I do. Because honestly, I'll tell you, I live a very stressful life, and I think Grand Marais is a really soul-filling kind of place. And so I'm able to tune into WTIP and kind of get that soul refilled on days when I'm not going to be able to be here. You know, we come here once a year and love it here, but we're not able to do it all the time. So it is something that you're able to attract listeners and potentially members and supporters. But I also will say it's not only about the sustainability of the station or of the public media organization. Ultimately, what we believe is that it's about the sustainability of a community, the vitality of a community. So if a community is able to address its own issues and really and feel empowered to address its own issues, it's going to be a healthier community. So a public media organization helps communities be healthier if it's a good public media organization. And I think Minnesota has a great example of that. Obviously, Twin Cities Public Television is great, and we do a lot of work with them. And WTIP is a great example of that as well.
Does you're part of, I'm assuming you're part, as Minnesota Public Radio or Public Television is.
Right.
part of national public.
Right. We're PBS, right? The public broadcasting
service. So does PBS have the ability to do that too, or is that just too big?
It's too big. It's too big. There's kind of two main national organizations, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and PBS. And I won't go into the distinction between the two, but there's very, very significant distinctions between the two. And PBS nationally is I think people think of us as a network, but we're really not. We're a loose affiliation of hundreds of public television stations around the country who are connected to the PBS logo and brand, who broadcast PBS programming. But each station, really how they were formed and why they were formed, was to be relevant and significant to their local community, to address the issues of their local community. The Public Broadcasting Act of 1961 is clear on this. It isn't just where your studio is, it's the fact of the relationship that you have with your community to be a local and relevant presence in your community to address those important issues. Though it's really returning to our history, honestly. Sure. And I think TIP has a great example of that as well.
We're visiting with Amy Shaw, who is Senior Vice President at St. Louis Public Television. I want to shift gears just slightly, Amy, and talk about a program that you were intimately involved with in St. Louis,
yes.
A program called Homeland, dealing with the very difficult issue of immigration, one that is very divisive.
Right.
And I know that you said you had it, so that's why I'm going this way. The information that we had, that it was on our local PBS station, is way down in Duluth. But is it on tonight? No?
It's not on tonight. It's actually on. It's on very late tonight on Duluth's second. Duluth has four channels, so it's on their secondary channel. They call it Second Chance PBS. But actually, you can see it in the daylight hours on Sunday at 1:30 p.m. You also, I mean, certainly we want you to watch it on Duluth. But I also know a lot of folks in the North Shore area do not have televisions. They like that, which we support that fully. That's okay. You can actually watch it online at explorehomeland.org. Homeland is a series that explores contemporary immigration. It's Homeland, Immigration in America. And while it's a series, a 3-hour series that's focused on immigration through the lens of a Midwestern state, in this case it happens to be Missouri, what we really looked at and what we found out was that this idea of immigration is really widely misunderstood, and the policy implications of contemporary immigration are widely misunderstood. And so much of the national dialogue and narrative on immigration is send everybody back or give them amnesty. There's kind of no in-between. And to be honest, neither of those are really viable considerations. And so I encourage people to watch the program because we bring up a lot of nuance and complication when it comes to issues of immigration. The first hour was on jobs, so the economic perspective on immigration, and we tell a number of complicated stories. And then the episode that you'd see on Sunday and also available online is called Enforcement, which is really probably the most controversial episode focused on immigration enforcement.
I apologize for interrupting, but so one of them is already run.
Yes.
Okay,
and then there's
this is the second one.
But again, you can see them all online.
Right.
And the third one is actually on refugees. So the state of Minnesota is a great example of that. You have a very sizable influx of Hmong refugees per capita. St. Louis, how this got started, St. Louis has the largest Bosnian community outside of Bosnia. There are 60,000 plus Bosnians who came into the St. Louis area, settled largely as refugees. But after many of them settled, they called in their relatives from other places around the country. In the U.S., they had sent them to New York and Chicago, and a lot of those people came to St. Louis because it had such a welcoming environment, low cost of living. It was easy to settle, easy to start businesses. And so that got us thinking about kind of the role that immigrants play in our community. And what we kept hearing across the community at various meetings and different interactions at all different levels of the community was, listen, if you wanted your community to be economically viable, you really need to think about population growth. And the native population is not reproducing at a rate to sustain the community. So immigration is a really important consideration, not only in St. Louis, but in communities across the country. But pretty much what you hear in the national news media is the vilification and the polarization of issues related to immigration. So what we did is we went out and talked to 5,000 plus Missourians, went across the state of Missouri to really understand what people knew about immigration. And while we thought it might be an assimilation story, what we learned is how much the national news narrative, how much the news cycle, you know, the soundbite that people hear influences what they know and what they think and understand about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty fascinating because Missouri, for example, does not have a huge undocumented or illegal immigrant population. But Missourians are very worried about this because what they hear is from Arizona, they hear from other places. I want to be clear, we don't take a position on immigration being good or bad. We really lay out some of the very nuanced and complicated factors that play into the immigration story. We're not telling a historical story here. We're telling a very contemporary story. And how we got to those stories was in our conversations with the 5,000-plus Missourians. That's how we pulled those stories out. So back to community engagement, this really started a very different process for producing a national documentary series, and it was really started within the community, and community engagement drove that process. I think we would have told a very, very different story, a much less important story, had we just come up with it in our own fertile imagination. Sure. So that's, sure. I think, the value of engagement. Again, thinking about it as kind of an ethos or a way of being in your community to make sure you tell something that's important and gets the right conversations started. So we know those conversations have been started, and we're very pleased that PBS has included this as an important part of their election strand of programming, because immigration is going to continue to be an issue now in this election and for many, many, many years to come. And obviously with Obama, with the executive order related to the DREAM Act, which is, again, allowing some of the young people who've been brought here illegally, who really had nothing to do with this, their parents brought them here illegally, and giving them a pathway, not to citizenship, but to actually to attend school, to be a part of American society. And that was really cut off to folks. We actually tell one of those stories in the episode that folks are going to see on Sunday, which is Frank Cortez, who is brought here to the United States from Mexico at age 4, and has a very complicated story.
And again, just finishing up, and I wish we had more time, but and the people can see that again at...
They can see it at 1:30 on Sunday.
Nobody mean online.
Online, sorry. explorehomeland.org. And I know a lot of people watch it online. Most of the young people watch only online. So it's a great way to watch it. Both episodes are up right now. The third episode will be up after August 3rd. That's when after it's aired on PBS nationally. So yeah, explorehomeland.org. You can also download a discussion guide. So if you're really interested in this topic, we know a lot of faith communities, book groups, different groups are downloading these discussion guides. This discussion guides also include a way to download very easily clips from the series that align perfectly with the questions we're asking in the discussion guide. So you actually have a very healthy conversation about this. And we've had lots of conversations from all different sides of the political spectrum. People who are rampantly for immigration and people who are really against it. We've actually had people who come together who have very differing viewpoints who started conversations about this, which is really the intent of this. Sure. We really need to have a way to have a conversation around these important issues, whether it's immigration, whether it's education. And we're in a place in our country right now where we're not really having those kinds of conversations.
We've been visiting with Amy Shaw. Amy is Senior Vice President of St. Louis Public Television. It's called Nine Network of Public Media. She is a... annual visitor to Cook County, and really appreciate your taking time on a Friday evening to visit with us.
Thanks so much. I love it here.
Thanks for being with
us. Thanks.